Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and this week's episodes. We are talking all things running, from the title to the European spots to the relegation zone. Then we head to the burn book, while over on the paid side, we will be discussing the final stages of the Champions League. And I don't know what we'll be talking about in anything but football. I've forgotten, but there will be an anything but football too. Oh yeah, some stories from our FD days. That's all on this week's episodes of the Champ. Fucking hell.
Pete.
Oh, leave it in.
So, unseen incidents. Yeah, unseen incidents. Mate, I'm struggling. I just did solo bedtime with two girls. It was a little bit chaotic. I sat down, hoovered a salad, came upstairs. I was 2 minutes after the time we'd agreed to come up. You were obviously not here. Yeah, I then waited for you.
Minutes. Yeah.
And yeah, then you and I just had like a 15-minute chat.
But I think it was
just, we're
20.
About to talk for 3 hours and we're just like, yeah, we'll just like do some off-air content. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's good to know that like we exist personally as well as professionally.
Barely.
Well, I mean, it was a very enjoyable 20-minute chat about the long list of coats that your heart desires currently.
Man, my heart just desires something I don't have at all times. There's always something I don't have. And I hanker for it. I think about it. Like as soon as I nail a purchase. So like after cycling through some black loafers recently, I bought some...
Oh yeah, did you sell the ones that weren't...
Bought some Velasco ones, sold them. Bought some Allen Edmund ones, sold them. Like basically, got my money back on all this. Like it was, you know, it's like if you buy good stuff in good condition, you basically get your money back. Especially if you bought it secondhand. I mean, sometimes I've made a profit without even really intending to.
I know the Velasco ones were too tight. What were wrong with the second pair?
They were too big. They were just like too long. It was really weird. Like it's one of those
a real Goldilocks scenario going on here.
It was one of those things where, you know, you buy something and it's an American size and they're like, well, for some brands, an 11.5 US, I'm basically a 10.5.
Yeah.
For some brands, sometimes I'm an 11 for width, basically. But for some brands, it's like, oh, you know, an 11.5 US is a 10.5 UK. Sometimes they're like, an 11 US is a 10.5 UK. It's a whole fucking like pain in the ass. So yeah, I just sold them. It was fine. And then I finally nailed it. I found some Crockett and Jones Bostons on eBay in immaculate condition. I got them for just under 200 quid. And Crockett and Jones Bostons normally are about 600 quid. Very, very happy with myself to get those. And you know, you're like, well, now I know that I do wear loafers. I'm like, I will keep these for like 10, 15 years. Fortunately, I've got a friend who's got Crockett and Jones Bostons. And I said, how long have you had them? And he was like, 10 years. I've resold them once or twice. They're still in really good shape. I'll keep them forever. And I was like, great. Okay, well, in that case, you know, you always have this thing when you're getting something at the beginning where you're like, am I actually going to wear it enough to justify buying a really good version? But once you know you're going to wear it, you're like, when it comes to leather shoes, you genuinely could have them for 20 years before like truly fucked. So it felt like a worthwhile expense, but 200 quid in the end. And probably the odd five or tenner here or there that I lost on other attempts.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke about that when we last, I think when we last did the podcast, about buy well, buy once. Yeah, couldn't agree more. I'm just looking at Crockett and Jones' website now. Their Finchleys are quite nice. The one with the horse bit on them.
Okay, sure.
Very nice.
I've also been looking at some some Prada sandals on eBay. But I was just like, why do I need these? Like, they are nice, but I was like, would I give a fuck about these if they weren't Prada? And the answer is like, not at this price point.
Are they the kind of like strappy one, like the open strap ones?
Yeah.
Almost like the kids' jelly shoe type design?
Hang on, I'm going to post them into our chat. This is fucking incredible audio content, by the way. I love it.
So they're like crossover. They're kind of like...
They're leather crossover. They are actually cool, do you not think?
Yeah, they're like the Nazareth 3000s from Prada. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're the Prada
Betty
JCs. the Crockett and Jones Nazareths is really, really strong. That's really good. That's so fucking stupid.
So my issue with these sandals is that you can obviously, they've got a what do you call them? Shoe horse, not shoe horse.
Like shoe tree.
Shoe tree in them. But they're obviously
the little what you call them that goes inside. Yeah.
They're obviously sandals, so they look really weird with the shoe tree in them. And also, yeah. I'm not convinced that people's feet won't look not quite as weird, but just a little bit weird in that design of sandals. It's a lot of toe on shoe.
Yeah, but I'm not weird about my feet. Like, some people, I guess, are, like, really scared of their feet. It never really occurred to me that people had an issue with seeing men in shorts or men in like, sandals until I went on, like, Twitter. And then suddenly it was just, like, a bunch of hot girls being like, like, there's literally no reason for me ever to see a man's feet. And I was just like, this makes me want to, like, sit outside your house with my dogs out. Like, this is, like... jumping out of bushes like a pervert, but just like flashing your toes at someone. But yeah. It's just like, we don't need to live in a world where people are constantly saying like my personal preferences are actually like the whole of the law. It's so silly. Like, also, I don't know, this is another thing recently. Oh god, is it worth wading into this? Okay, so you know there was this story recently about the online sexual assault academy, supposedly, that was getting 62 million men had visited this website.
Yeah.
And I read,
I didn't
the
know
story.
You were going there for a second until the 62 million.
And people are posting about this. Yeah, I didn't know about it until I saw all these, you know, like
the posts about 62 million and then
oblique
stories,
it's like 62 million, let that sink in. And I was like, I know just from like basic logic and media literacy, there is no way 62 million is the right number. And I'm not saying that less than that means it's fine, but I was like, let's go and read the story. And I read the story and they were like, there is a porn website that gets 62 million clicks, like got 62 million clicks that month or something. And on this website, there is a forum of about 1,000 users, which is this like drugging, like sleep, sexual assault content. And I was like, look, 1,000 people is pretty fucking bad, but actually... 1,000 is like a number you can investigate and prosecute.
Yeah, you can have a
like
list.
If it was 62 million, you can't do shit. You can close the forum down, but that's all you could do. If it's 1,000 people, you might be able to make some arrests. You know, like that. Yeah. And also, I whenever I've seen anybody say online, just so you know, it's not 62 million people. It's different. I've literally seen people be like, stop making excuses, or why are men so defensive about this? Like, you must be one of them. And I was like, I don't really think that is. I mean, I'm sure there are those people, but I don't really think that is what's going on. Like, it's just you didn't read the story that, yeah. that you're quoting. But a lot of the accounts that I've seen, like the quote unquote women's accounts that are like getting into those arguments with men and being like, you're a defender, like you're defending rapists, like that kind of stuff. Those accounts... 100% bots. Like, I've seen a load of them where I'm like, the profile picture is an AI woman, the location is not where they claim to be, and they're like stoking up all this like shit about this, and
just engagement farming basically.
Yeah. And so I think in the same way, like, the reason I made this point was, you know, with like men wearing sandals, but I do think quite often you see this kind of like quote unquote controversy online, and it's not actually like two human beings disagreeing with each other.
Yeah.
It's like a bot engagement farming and people mistakenly like getting in the middle of it. Like, so yeah, I kind of feel I'm noticing that more and more at the moment where I'm like, no, this is not a real conversation. And I do think, you know, and actually I've had clients who are like this. I do think that like for young people, I mean people in their like early 20s, it must be fucking bananas to like try and work out how to like date or how to be a person when you see this kind of content online all the time about like men should do this and they shouldn't do that, and women should do this and they shouldn't do that, and if you think this then you're X, and like this is a red flag and blah blah blah, like all this kind of stuff. Like, and the thing is, you're not even necessarily getting real women's opinions. Like, you might just be getting sucked into a kind of bot farm.
Yeah.
It's really fucked up.
Yeah, even all of the content creators around relationship stuff is just so toxic on both sides. Like, I remember when we were of the age of like at uni and just like dating or like whatever, you go on a night out and see what happens. Like, that was a completely different time. That was a completely different time, a different era. I don't feel like I'd love growing up in this era versus the era I grew up in. I kind of think we nailed like early like millennials basically nailed the best generation to grow up in over the last like say five or six, because we remember, we were old enough to remember life before the internet and before social media. We were old enough to kind of be adults as social media was taking over, or late teens into adults, into adulthood, before it like fully took over. And now we're almost out the other side of thinking that it's super important and like our life depends on how we're viewed online, as it's becoming overly toxic to like a tipping point of where it's becoming unusable. Like, we've got the best versions of each of those stages of our lives without being like completely too old to not fully understand or fully utilize technology as it is now, and not being so young that it's, we've not known a time before it.
Yeah, that's pretty true, you know. Like, yeah, like we all learned to like masturbate with analog materials. That's what that's basically what you're driving at, right?
Yeah, sure. We were using like FHMs back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
When,
like,
when
real
nothing else to go. Yeah, we were living for the 10-minute preview of Television X.
Oh, mate, those are the day. Yeah, we're basically the D-Day guys, you know.
The double D-Day guys.
Yeah, exactly. Where we were all just like knocking one out in the trenches, and you know, we suffered through that, but it gives us an appreciation, and also lets us know that if the internet ever went down, we could survive. Like, we could continue.
We could go back to our basic training.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we could turn off the autopilot and go back manual mode. Yeah, I guess that's good to know. Well, what a fucking bizarre start to the podcast today. What are we talking about today, Pete?
We're talking about everything end of season. Title running, European spots, relegation spots. We are recording on Wednesday night, so there's a few games going on at the minute. But as it stands, most teams have 5 games left. Couple of teams have but by the end of tonight most teams will have 4 games left, and then a few will have slightly more. But yeah, we're heating up into the kind of very business end of the season. Obviously, we did an episode a couple of months ago or a month or so ago about Arsenal, are they bottling the title? We both downplayed that and said no, it was actually if you looked at in that period from the time of recording back to the start of the year, them and City had taken the same amount of points and Villa had taken less, so they had kept pace with all of their closest contenders at that point.
And it aged super well. We
it
were completely
aged like
correct.
Fucking milk.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously they lost.
I don't know. I think that at the time, like,
at the time it was,
we were like
they
hadn't bottled the title. Yeah. And I also think it's worth pointing out, you know, like I said this on Monday, but like now everyone's like, look at Arsenal bottling, and like Man City would never do it. And I was like, a month ago, we were literally getting headlines that were like, it's like Man City, there was a point when Arsenal had dropped enough points that they were like, if Man City win all their remaining games, they win the title. Like as in, like, mathematically, that's the case. And it was sort of like, Man City's destiny is in their own hands. And then they drew with Forest and they drew with West Ham. Like, so did they not bottle a little bit there too? But anyway, like, yeah, at that point, Arsenal had not bottled. Now the bottling has begun. Yeah. Though I think, you know, maybe that is... I didn't really think they bottled the game at City. And to be honest with you, the Bournemouth game, I think there's obviously a bit of nerve there. But I also kind of don't want to downplay, like, what was, I think, a really good performance from Bournemouth, where they were just, like straight up the better team. Like, again, you know, how much of that is down to bottle is kind of an open question. But there was a lot of that game where I was like, this is, like, actually a quality issue. It wasn't like, oh, my God, like... if they were just playing a bit with a bit more bravery, Arsenal would have like won that game comfortably. Whereas there, you know, like the Wolves game, I think was maybe like that. This game, I was like, I think Bournemouth were just like better than Arsenal in this game. Like that's kind of how I came away feeling about it. So yeah, it's a, well, we're going to talk about the title first. I mean, where do you want to kick off with the title talk?
Well, I guess obviously we did a big episode on it, and now we're a month later, and I think for the first time this season, I'm starting to feel like the tides have fully shifted. I think, yeah. I guess it's weird. I watched the post-match analysis after the game on Sunday, and apart from Roy Keane, who said he didn't care, all the other pundits said that they think it's City's title to lose now. And in many ways it is, even though they are 3 points back, but with a game in hand. Assuming they win that game, which is tonight? Yes, tonight, isn't it? Against Burnley.
Not really. Tonight's not their game in hand. Tonight is the game they should have had this weekend that's been moved forward. Their game in hand is against Palace. They've got, like, Palace at home is actually the game in hand. So they do play tonight, but then Arsenal play at the weekend when City play only in the FA Cup. So tonight's not their game in hand, really. But I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, their game in hand is technically Palace.
If they beat Burnley tonight, they will be...
They'll go top
of the league, because they'll at least, at worst, have the same goal difference and they'll have scored more.
Yeah.
So they'll be top tonight if they beat Burnley, which most people will assume they will.
Oh, I think it's fair to say... I don't know. I don't want to go after Burnley. It's just that I was like, you know, I almost tweeted earlier. I was just like, do we think that Burnley will take a pot? Will they draw with City tonight, or will they just beat them outright? Yeah. Like, what are we expecting here? I think we all probably think like 5-0 is probably more likely than 1-1 in that game.
Oh, for sure. And it does feel like that with City at the minute. It feels like they are just kind of... we've had loads of questions about them across the whole season, but it feels like they're starting to really kind of cook at the absolute right moment. And yeah, also Arsenal are in the absolute, like, the other complete other end of that spectrum. And I said during that last episode, of however long ago it was, probably 4 weeks, I said that I thought the Carabao Cup final was an important game, even though it wasn't important in the title race per se. I thought if they lost that comfortably, it could basically catalyze a wobble for them. And it's kind of exactly what happened. Like, they've won one of their last five games post Carabao Cup final. Sporting away, they lost to Southampton, lost to Bournemouth, drew with Sporting at home, lost to City at the weekend. I think the loss to City was a fair one in the sense that, like, it wasn't necessarily their fault. I think that was just a finely balanced game where City got the rub of the green. Like, is it Eze shot that went that was literally like 2 centimeters away from being in? If that was 2 centimeters more inside the post,
it has one posting in.
Like, he hits the post and it runs literally across the entire face of the goal. And goes
Ezra has one that comes off the inside of the post. Yeah. You know, like, Cherki has one that comes off the post and goes in.
Like, Cherki's goal was a moment of brilliance. What was the second goal? Oh, yeah, Haaland just out-muscles.
Haaland. Yeah, Haaland.
You know, Gabriel. I think that game could have gone literally either way. I think that's not a bottling game. I think the games before that, there were performances that were questionable. But it's also just not the season. Like, this is this weird April thing with Arsenal. Have you seen the stats about April and Arsenal under Arteta?
Yeah.
Like, they don't make for great reading. So under Arteta, Arsenal have averaged a 60% win rate, which is good. Very good. But in April alone, their win rate is 40%, which is by far the lowest month of any month of the year. They've played 26 games, won 11, drawn 7, and lost 8, all in April. All like this absolute pivotal business end of the season. You've probably got, what, 4 to 5, depending on how many games you've had to delay because of going deep in domestic or continental trophies, you may end up having like 6 games in April. Like, this is a really, really big, pivotal period, like, month at the end of the season. And Arsenal, historically under Arteta, have performed horrendously. We've seen this before. Mm. And it is strange because it's a shame. If Arsenal go on to finish second and City win the title, it would kind of be a bit of an injustice for me to have this City team win the title over this Arsenal team. Because for me, this Arsenal team have been fantastic for all of the season up until about 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And I have so many questions about the City team. Pep's halfway out the door. There are huge issues with defence, or there were huge issues with defence at the start of the season. They're uber reliant on Haaland bagging loads of goals, and then he goes out and then he goes off and they kind of, you know, really don't know what to do. If this City team wins the league...
And it also is kind of like January, it was like they just went out and bought like 2 Premier League starters. Like that was the thing that they did.
If this City team wins the league over this Arsenal team, I just think it's real, real injustice. Maybe injustice is the wrong word, but like for a football purist, not that I am a football purist, it feels like this is Arsenal's title winning season. This feels like the start of the peak of this Arteta era. Like, everything is right. Obviously you've had injuries and all, but that squad the whole way through it is like pound for pound potentially the best squad in the world and best defense in the world. And if you have all of your attacking components fit and playing, one of the best attack in the world, you know, I guess Gyökeres Havertz is a bit of a strange kind of center forward Arsenal, but it is still a truly, truly elite team. They've sat at the top of the power rankings in Optus power rankings for literally like the best part of a year. They're second now behind Bayern. But I think it's just it would be a real injustice. But at the same time, City have been in fantastic nick. Like, their last four games have been against Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal twice. The aggregate score across those four games, 11-1. And three of those games were away.
Okay. So I agree with everything that you're saying. And I think City have... After tonight's game, City will be the favourites, according to the prediction engines. Right now, they're not, only because Arsenal have the 3 points and City still need the 3 points. Like... And having points is better than having a game in hand.
Burden hands
like,
in the bush. Yeah.
When you're at the top of the league. That's how it goes. That will change tonight. But everybody, I think, we all agree now that like City are favourites.
Yeah.
So I thought what would be interesting in this segment is to maybe point out some ways that... some question marks about City to say like why the run-in may be more interesting than a straight City coronation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because now everybody's kind of agreed that City are going to win the league. Us sitting here and saying City are going to win the league, isn't that interesting? So I think that when you look at the fixtures make for quite interesting reading. Like tonight is by far City's easiest game. Other than that, they play four teams in the top half, right? So they play Everton away, which is, you know, like, yeah, you should beat Everton, but away is not easy. Brentford home, historically a difficult game for Man City. Bournemouth away, nasty. Villa home, that should be an easy win, but, you know, like Villa, I don't think they'll really need points to wrap up the Champions League. I also think that they will probably have a Europa League final to look forward to, so lots of question marks. But
also, all four of those teams are scrapping for some form of European football.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that there are, like, there's at least one banana skin in there, right? With Bournemouth away, potentially two and a half. Arsenal's run in. Arsenal don't play a single team in the top half of the table. Admittedly, they do play Newcastle, but Newcastle are pretty out of form. Arsenal have three home games, two away games. City have, I think, three home games, three away games. But, you know, like, I'm just saying that, like, that's quite favourable for Arsenal.
Yeah.
I think Newcastle home, obviously Newcastle could do something. West Ham away, that would not surprise me if that's the one. Like, if I have to predict Arsenal dropping points in one of these games, that's the one I go for. Because I think that might be the week where... West Ham are like, if we win, we stay up.
That's a real Sophie's choice. Do we win the league or do we get like it's Tottenham?
Yeah, sure. So from this point of view, the fixture list is undeniably better for Arsenal. Okay, so that's one thing. Another thing I think is that Arsenal do have a more crowded couple of weeks now. They have a lot of fixtures in the next couple of weeks. They have like five games
in 15 days.
But then City will have a more crowded few weeks after that.
FA Cup.
And with the game in hand, the Premier League game in hand.
Oh, yeah, of course, because they had
So they will probably have a couple of double Premier League match weeks.
Yeah, which, they'll go like Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday or something like
Which might be fine if those teams are on their deck chairs, but if they're not, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't want to have to go, like, play Palace at home on a Wednesday and then go away to Bournemouth on a Saturday. Like, I would not want to do that. That's actually what Arsenal did, and then they lost to Bournemouth. Like they had a big Champions League game that they had to get through, and then they played Bournemouth, and like one of those results went badly. And then the next week they had a big Champions League game, and then they had to go away to City, and that result went badly too. So I mean, like, these things are a factor.
For I think Arsenal's fixtures are way more deck chair opponent than City's fixtures. Like Fulham are currently 12th, 45 points. They're safe, but they're also not going to go anywhere. They've got nothing to play for the end of the season, realistically. West Ham do. They're scrapping for survival. Burnley already down. Crystal Palace, again, 13th, 43 points, same as Fulham. Nothing really to play for. They also could have their eye on a Europa Conference League final. So their attention will be elsewhere. City, on the other hand, after tonight, every single one of those games are a team that can feasibly finish in some form of European competition at the end of the season. And if you look at, which we'll come on to European spots in a minute, but if you look at from, say, 7th place down to Fulham in 12th, they're separated currently by 3 points. So this will go right down to the wire, I think. Maybe one or two teams will fall away.
It's even crazier than that. Palace are miles down, and Palace are down in 13th, but they've got two games in hand.
And they're only 5 points back off 7th.
And if they won both those games, they'd be 7th. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's so tight. Even Newcastle, so for example, when we say Arsenal, you know, like, don't play a team in the top half of the table. If Newcastle won two games, they'd be in the top half of the table. Like, it's so tight. Like, all these teams are really kind of close together. But anyway, I mean, like, to, obviously, you know, this kind of ping pongs back and forth. So Arsenal have the easier schedule.
Mm.
City are probably more constitutionally suited to just battering teams like down the stretch.
You know, I think historically they've been fantastic.
No, it's not. Yeah, but I don't mean historically, because I don't think that's useful. Like, all this stuff, we keep seeing this stuff again and again about how good City are at the end of the season, and I'm like, this City team is not the City team of 3 years ago, and the league is not the league of 3 years ago. Like, the league makes you fight now for points. At the same time, City are really good in attack and they're okay in defense. Arsenal are really good in defense and they're okay in attack. One of those is better for just relentlessly beating inferior teams. Whereas, you know, like Arsenal are like, if you built a team to try and win the Champions League against more talented sides. Like, City are like, if you try to build a team to win leagues. And like, there is a reason that Pep, generally speaking, is much, much better in the league than he is in the Champions League. Like, he's won a couple of Champions Leagues. He's won three, I think. But I think we all have criticisms of the way he manages in the Champions League. In the league, he just demolishes leagues again and again. So anyway, so that's to go back and forth. On the other hand, I do think that while City look very good in attack, the defensive issues are not fixed at all. They are okay in defense. They are okay. They gave up quite a bit against Arsenal. In fact, they gave up more XG than they created against Arsenal, which is interesting. And if you look at, you were talking about these last few games. Look at the league wins versus Chelsea and Arsenal and the cup win over Liverpool, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They won these games 9-1 cumulatively, right? They scored 9, they had 1 against. They scored 9 goals off 6.1 XG. They allowed 1 goal off 4.2 XG. So their goal difference across those fixtures was 8, plus 8. Their XG difference across those three fixtures was just under plus 2. So that's still good, you know, to put up plus 2, you know, it's like almost a plus 7, like 0.7 XG difference per 90 across those three games. But the point is only that they are still giving up chances and they aren't quite as dominant as those scores suggest. The Chelsea game, I think we all thought they really struggled in the first half and Chelsea should probably have scored. The Arsenal game, if Arsenal had scored that breakaway with Havertz, like, that would also not have been like, wow, Arsenal finished a half chance and they've robbed City. It would be like, Arsenal had a really big chance, like, that was the biggest chance of the game. And they scored it. So while I think, you know, that they do look like they've clicked, they do look like they've improved in lots of ways, I do still expect them to win the title. I don't think that they're like, this idea that they are like the City winning machine and they are just in full effect and nobody's going to be able to touch them, I find that hard to believe. And I think Bernardo Silva said this. Maybe it's a fake quote. I feel like there are always fake quotes going around these days. But I think Bernardo Silva said after the Arsenal game, he said, like, both of these teams are not going to win all their games, you know? I think it's relatively unlikely one of these teams wins all their games. But if they do, they win the league. If Arsenal win all 5 of their games, I think they win the league, because I don't think City win all their games. I think probably both teams drop points at least once. And so I kind of expect it to end up like 83-83 and City win on goal difference, or City 83 and Arsenal 80 or something like that, you know, like a draw and a loss in there. Like, that's kind of how I expect it to go. But of course, if you're not so dominant that you're going to win every game, one team can get a draw and another team can get a loss and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if Arsenal go away to West Ham and draw and that same week City lose to Bournemouth, then you're like, okay, that's Arsenal in the lead again. Like, that's a point advantage again. Like, so it can change quite quickly. And I just think that it used to be a few years ago that, like, some games would just, like, give us the points before we even get there. It just is not like that anymore. It simply is not like that anymore.
Yeah, I remember that run in the 97-99 point season, Liverpool City, that season, yeah, where, like, both teams literally just won some silly, like, the last 10 games in a row, basically.
Right. No, even the one I think that is it, the 23-24 Arsenal season, where it was like really close, and that was like the first time, was that
was when there was 91-89.
This was when there was this real like conversation.
But yeah,
about,
I'm just looking at that. I've just googled that season, and both City and Arsenal won their last 5 games
about bottling. Yeah, so in the 23-24 season, I think City ended that season with like 18 straight wins or something. That season in the league, Arsenal ended with, okay, from match week 21 to the end of the season, so from the 20th of January to the end of the season, Arsenal had one loss against Villa. They had one draw away at Man City. They won every single other game.
Yeah.
Like, they dropped 5 points from, like, whatever that is, 54 or something insane. Like, 51. Like, it was absolutely bananas. That was also when they had that run where they beat Palace 5-0, West Ham 6-0, Burnley 5-0, Newcastle 4-1, Sheffield United 6-0. Do you remember that? Like, there's a four-week period in there where they... Five-week period where they go 3-1 against Liverpool, 6-0 West Ham, 5-0 Burnley, 4-1 Newcastle, 6-0 Sheffield United. That's, like, consecutive weeks. It was fucking insane. And that was not enough to win the league.
Yeah.
Because City were even better than that down that run. Like, it was absolutely fucking bananas. But that is just not how it is anymore. Like, it just... This season has been really, really rough. Really rough. Everybody, I think, has had to work pretty hard. Yeah, I mean, City just relentlessly won that season. Like, everybody's had to work pretty hard for the points that they've got. And, you know, I said this on the transfer flow the other day that, like, I looked into it and it was like, City were aiming to win 8 straight Premier League games or something. And between them, PSG and Bayern Munich only had one such run this season. Between them, in their respective leagues.
Really?
Yeah. So that shows you, you know, and, you know, even...
That's quite surprising given the dominance of both of those teams historically in their respective leagues.
Well, and do you know what City's longest winning run is this season in the league?
Probably what, like 6 games?
Yeah, 6 games.
Yeah.
From match week 13 to match week 18, they won 6 games in a row. And then, you know, during this period where they've been like unplayable, they've been like catching Arsenal, they had 4 wins in a row. Then they had 2 draws where they drew to Forest and West Ham. Mm. And now they've had 2 consecutive league wins. And we're like, okay, sure. But they also, you know, demolished, like they beat Arsenal in the Carabao Cup final. They demolished Liverpool in the FA Cup. Yeah. They also lost to Real Madrid twice in there.
I know, but if you take out that Real Madrid 2 legs, which were they were not good in that.
But why would you take that out?
I'm just saying, if you take, I know what you're going to say. Like, if you don't look at the losses or the bad results, then of course your the data looks better. But outside of the UCL, the last time City lost would be mid-Jan. The Manchester Derby.
But they don't need to lose. Like, it's not about them losing.
No, I
right?
know, I know. I'm still saying that, like, even though the Premier League generally is really competitive this year and teams aren't going to go on massive big runs like they have done in previous seasons, City are still at least getting points out of every single game, basically, that they've played since. They've gotten points out of every single game they've played
since
mid-January. And I think that goes a long way for a team like Arsenal who are trying to keep pace or trying to stay ahead. It makes them just feel more relentless that they, even when they, like, they so infrequently drop points, but when they do, they're still like getting something out of games. And I think that gets very, very tiring over a season. I think Arsenal have reached a tipping point where their heads have just kind of gone a bit and City are just doing enough regularly enough to be able to get themselves over the line from this stage.
Yeah, I think that's totally possible. But I also look at them and I think, okay, yeah, if you want to take out the Real Madrid games, that's fine. But let's take out all the cup games then.
Sure.
And then you're like, City's last 4 games go 2-2 at home with Forest, 1-1 away at West Ham. They beat Chelsea 3-0. They beat Arsenal 2-1. And I look at that and I'm like, is this an unplayable team?
No, but also if you look at that, the point still stands. Like, they still will have not lost a Premier League game since.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter, Pete, because they don't need. Yeah, but I think that the, like, what have they lost, like, doesn't really make any difference. Like, when you know that a draw might be enough that you don't win the title.
But if they go the next 5 games undefeated, I think Arsenal will lose a game.
So I don't think going undefeated is enough. If they draw 2 games then they will end up on 81 points.
Tight.
Like, that, you don't want to do that.
Arsenal are on, what, 70 at the minute?
Yeah. So if Arsenal
win
4.
They need 12 points, they need 4. They can lose, yeah.
You know, like, this is the thing. Like, this is where we are now. So, but anyway, I still think City will win the league from here. I'm just saying that, like, there are question marks here. And the idea that, like, we've returned to kind of peak City, I think, jury's still out for me. Let's move on to Europe then, because we've gone quite long on that. So, like, Europe race is fucking crazy. We might need to rip through this. But, like, basically, Champions League-wise, City locked up, Arsenal locked up, United locked up, Villa locked up. Like, that is done. And the only question, I guess, is whether Liverpool could get pulled back from fifth. I don't think that's going to happen. Chelsea have obviously gone, like, just fucking imploded. They've sacked Rossinha. Brighton are five behind Liverpool.
Hadn't played a game more.
God, their goal difference is, like, almost the same, though.
Yeah.
Like, they've got nine and Liverpool 11. That's horrific. But, yeah, they've played a game more. I also think, you know, you can, you, when you start, we're at the stage of the season as well where you start looking at people's, like, games. Brighton end the season with Newcastle away, Wolves home, Leeds away, United home. That is not nice. That said, Liverpool, I think, end the season quite unpleasantly.
Yeah, United
as well.
Away, Chelsea home, Villa away, Brentford home.
Fuck that. That's like, horrible.
That is a horrible run. But
that
also,
is a horrible run. Oh my God.
That 5-point gap with
is
one game
yeah,
extra.
Yeah.
And five games remaining.
Where are the five points for
exactly.
Brighton in there?
And I think it would be really interesting if the Premier League didn't get the fifth spot this year. So they were going for fourth and they were trying to catch Villa, who are 3 points ahead of them, with that running and Villa being like still a bit question marks about them.
But also, also thinking, is the easier route for us to win the Europa?
Sure, like, exactly. I think that will be really interesting. I think the fact that the Premier League has the fifth Champions League spot kind of just decides the Champions League spots already as they are.
Sure.
I think the Premier League finish. I think the table finishes in the top five. Not how it currently finishes. I think it finishes with City on top, but the rest, 3, 4, and 5, finish where they currently are.
So it's a bit more interesting to think about, like, the places below that.
Yeah.
Like, I was chaos. Screenshotting the table from United down, and I did it like 3 times. You know, where you like command shift 4.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To like screen. And I was just like,
you couldn't go down far enough.
I kept being like, no, I need to go down further. Yeah. And so it goes, I've got all the way down to Palace because Palace are on 43 points with 2 games on the teams in, you know, on Brighton and Chelsea. They're totally in play there and they're one of the superior sides here. So like the teams in play here, with the teams within 7 points here of Brighton are Chelsea, Brentford, Bournemouth, Everton, Sunderland, Fulham and Palace. And I know 7 points sounds like a lot, but Palace have got 2 games in hand. So it's not that big a difference. So I was looking at the transfer flows numbers, like, because, well, they're stats bomb numbers. I was looking at like our stats bomb tables, and according to the XG numbers, like Brighton and Chelsea are the better teams here, unsurprisingly. Then there's a little drop to Palace, then there's a drop to Brentford, and like that's kind of the order. And then you get to like Bournemouth, and actually if you go across the last 2 months, just like points wise, not even XG, Brighton have taken more points over the last 2 months. They've taken more points than any team in the league, and they have the 3rd best expected goal difference behind City and Arsenal over the last couple of months. Right, another data point against like City are just like unplayable now. It's like Brighton,
and they have one of the easier runs in as well.
Like,
they
taking more
have
points
one of the easiest run-ins in the league as well.
I don't know, the one we were just talking about. I mentioned it just now. I don't think it's easy, but I don't think anybody does. Like Newcastle away, Wolves home, Leeds away, United home, like.
But United home last game of the season, who cares? Like
United deck chairs, Leeds deck chairs, Wolves are playing for pride. To be honest, they're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
But Newcastle right now is not that hard, but Newcastle away...
Yeah, but that's one of 4 games.
4 games is not many games.
I know.
Like, some of these teams have 5 games. Like I just don't... And they've only got a 2-point advantage on Brentford and Bournemouth, a 3-point advantage on Everton. Like one of these teams is going to get a win. Like the odds of one of those teams getting a win, I think, are pretty good.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's because there's so many teams within touching distance, one will rise above the rest. Like a minimum of one will rise. And then it becomes a kind of shootout between 3 teams coming in the last like 2 games a season.
And so Palace and Brentford do have games in hand on Brighton and Chelsea, but they're all away games.
And they've got a lot of work to do, like you said, about probability.
Bournemouth have an extra home game. You know, so like that's kind of where we are. When you've got 5 games left, the teams that have 3 home, 2 away, like it's genuinely a big difference over like, because even if you go to a team that's on their deck chairs, man, like say Arsenal need to win at Palace on the last day of the season to try and win the title. Palace are going to be in don't give a fuck mode. And especially if they're in a European final. If they're not in a European final though, you know, because then they'll just rest everybody.
Yeah,
if they're not in a European final, even when Palace don't give a fuck, like going away to Selhurst is like, it's still not a fun expedition for anybody. Like Palace can make your life a misery. So anyway, I mean, the way I look at it is it's really tempting to put Bournemouth higher because Bournemouth have had some big results. I think they do have a pretty hard run in, I think. But my order, I think, for the top 8 end of the season, I've got City, Arsenal, United. I've gone Liverpool, then Villa.
Okay.
Don't trust Villa. City, Arsenal, United, Liverpool, Villa. And then I've gone Brighton, Bournemouth and Brentford. So I've got Chelsea below eighth on here. In fairness, Chelsea are...
I also have Chelsea missing out in Europe entirely.
Chelsea are just like disastrous
it's
right now.
It's absolute nosedive. And they've just sacked Coutinho.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And their fixtures, they've got Forest home. Forest will want to win that because it will like... Basically, yeah, yeah. If they win that, Forest are good. Then they go Liverpool away, Tottenham home. They will want to win that one. Like, yeah. That's the one of these. If I had to bet on... If you told me Chelsea's only going to win one of these games till the end of the season, I'd be like Tottenham.
It'll be Spurs and they'll get Spurs.
Because then they go Sunderland away and like... But they are in horrific form. You know, as everybody knows, they have not scored in their last five league games. In that time, they've lost 1-0 twice and they've lost 3-0 three times. It is not a good run for them.
11-0 across the last five games in the Premier League.
And it's not even like...
They also didn't have a shot on target against Brighton last night.
And three of those are home games, by the way. And like, yeah, okay, City, tough. United, they got unlucky. United were dog shit in that game and were fucking lucky to get anything from it, in my opinion. Like, United had like four shots in that match. It was disgraceful. The Brighton performance is like astonishingly bad. They got a bit unlucky against Newcastle as well. Everton played Everton even, but I mean, like, the problem is with this Chelsea team is like, when the chips are down, they are fucked. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no like, fucking hell, guys. Like, come on, we've got to go and do something here.
Well,
when
yeah,
the chips
because,
are down,
because
all
they
these Chelsea guys are just
20-year-olds.
Like, yeah, and also, and I do think as well, like, not to go all kind of reform UK about it.
Okay, here we go.
But like, your connection with the club is going to determine, like, all these guys want to win, right? They are professional sportsmen. Like, the idea that they don't care at all is bullshit.
Yeah, but the idea that they don't care about the club is...
If you grew up a fucking Chelsea fan, yeah. Like, if I grew... Like, if I'm Bukayo Saka, and Declan Rice isn't, like, a childhood Arsenal fan, but he is, like, a Londoner. Like, he chose to come to Arsenal over basically... He had his choice of clubs.
Yeah.
Like, he obviously feels, like, a connection to the club. And also, a bunch of those guys have been at Arsenal for a while now. With Chelsea, most of these guys have appeared from like all over the world. They don't really have a connection with the club. Some of them are kind of like, you arrive, maybe you go off to Strasbourg, maybe you come back, fuck knows, like, don't really know. Like, basically, we own your player rights, but it's not like we are bringing you into the Chelsea family, you know? So there are guys there like Reece James or Josh Achampong who are probably like, fuck yes, like, we need to like play for the pride of the badge. A bunch of these guys are going to be like, brother, I don't care. Like,
yeah.
I don't care about this. Like, who cares? And I do think that you see that stuff on the pitch. Like, you know, it's really hard to quantify this stuff. But when I look at stuff like one thing that like someone like Arteta has done with Arsenal, and that managers who really get players to buy into, you know, like Pochettino Spurs was like an amazing example of this, is that you're like, they just do all the shit like they care. So like, getting in the right positions is one thing, you know, and being willing to like track back is one thing. But if you look at the way Arsenal behave when they lose the ball, everybody is like desperate to
yeah,
get
it's really
goal
deliberate,
side.
Yeah.
Everybody desperately like runs back and they're like, I will fucking get between you and the goal. Everyone does it. Like they, like their lives are on the line. They really care about it. And yeah, Pochettino Spurs were just like, I will not let the team down. I will not let the manager down.
It's like when you see,
I
like,
care about it so much.
Right back. Celebrating like they scored a goal when they block across,
or like a winger chasing back and just like bodying someone off the ball, like Martinelli did that in the Champions League the other day against Sporting, like just made like a 50-yard run, like shoulder barged somebody off the ball and started another attack, and I was just like,
fuck yeah,
and I was like, yeah, like that is the kind of thing that comes from like the team actually liking each other and playing together and caring,
yeah,
you know, and you can't really fake it. Some players are just like that, but you can't really fake it. And with Chelsea, so often at the moment when they go down a goal, you're like, good night. Like, they're not coming back from this, because they're just like, oh, well, there goes
another
one.
It's kind of like when you see like all the stuff with Ryan Cherki at the minute, like in the middle of one of the big brawls at Arsenal, he was just doing keepy-ups. And there was another clip of him trying to like do a bottle flip while he was waiting on the sideline, waiting for some like free kick to be taken. Like, he's just like, yeah, cool. I'm just here to play football. I don't really care.
Sure,
I think there are way too many of them at Chelsea.
Yeah, but that's a slightly different thing, isn't it?
You could argue kind of thing.
Yeah, I think with Cherki, it's like, I think he kind of like is a bit online. Like, I think that's part of it.
Sure.
We
think it's his character.
Yeah, he's a bit too much of a character. But like, it also might be that, you know, he does have a reputation as being like a bit of a hothead. And it also might be that Pep is just like, if don't anything's kicking off, you fucking walk away. I will fine you £100,000 if you don't walk away and just like do something else. And I think, you know, like that works for him. But with Cherki, like, there's no indication that he doesn't care. Right. And actually, Cherki's out of possession stuff has really improved. Whereas you look at Chelsea and I'm like, these guys don't care. Like, yeah, some of them do.
I think Cherki's out of possession stuff's improved because if it didn't, he wouldn't get picked. I think.
Sure. Exactly. But that does matter. Whereas at Chelsea, I think your out of possession stuff can not improve and you still get picked. But anyway, yeah, so I just find it hard. Like, Chelsea could totally, you know, come back here and do something. Like, I'm willing to be... Like, when I was doing that list, I was just like, how much do I believe in this? I don't know, but it kind of looks like Brighton are peaking at the right time. Brentford are always hard to play against and will care. It's also just like, what does it mean to Bournemouth to get, like, European football? It means a lot more than it means to Chelsea to play in, like, the Europa. Like, Bournemouth having the opportunity to play in the Europa League... They'd be like they are going to be like, holy fuck, this is a huge deal for us. Chelsea are going to be like, fuck the Europa League. Like, I don't want to be in the Europa. If I can't be in the Champions League, I'd rather play a game a week. Like that I do think is a bit of a factor as well. Like, maybe. I don't know if it's really a factor, but it's...
Yeah. I mean, when Chelsea were in the Conference League, it was a farce. Like, yeah, they were absolutely ruling teams every single week, and it just meant nothing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I don't fucking know. It's like that day that you know, sometimes football clubs have like a kind of family day where two of the pros take on like 100 kids. Yeah. You're like, that's what it was like when Chelsea were in the Conference League. They were like, we're gonna bring on a guy who costs like 40 million
off the bench,
like, to play against a team who are costs 40p. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, who gives a fuck? Like, we're gonna go and play, like, you know, fucking Azkaban. Like, just doesn't it doesn't matter. Who gives a shit? Yeah, so anyway, like, what are your picks for these eight, and then let's like get into relegation quickly.
So I've got City, Arsenal, United, then I've stuck with Villa. I think the gap and Liverpool at the minute, I think they'll be able to hold on. Just Liverpool fifth. This might be wishful thinking just because of Igor Tiago's season. Definitely not Igor Tiago's season. I put Brentford sixth and Brighton seventh. And then I'm toss up between Chelsea and Bournemouth for eight. I think both will miss out on European football.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, you could convince me that order is the right order. Like, do I trust Liverpool? No. Do I trust Villa? Double no. And yeah, again, because, you know, when there is like a Europa League semi on the cards, then you're just like, who knows? Who knows? Like, this is the thing. After the weekend, the incentives will change again for all these games. All right. Shall we go quickly into relegation? Wolves down. Burnley down. So, but this is the thing, okay? A few weeks ago, it was like Spurs, West Ham, Forest. And the scary thing, I mean, the scary thing for West Ham too, but the scary thing if you're Spurs is that a couple of weeks ago, it was like, you just got to be better than West Ham or Forest.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you got to be better than West Ham.
Yeah, like, Forest are pretty much safe.
Like, this is the thing. I look at their last few fixtures and I think...
In terms of percentages, Opta have them as a 4% chance of finishing 18th. Four.
That's nuts.
I checked last night, four.
Damn. Okay, because there's still the part of me that's like, surely it won't happen. Like, in fact, I still kind of believe they'll escape. But that feeling is fighting my rational brain. In the same way that when I'm like, Arsenal could still win the league, I'm just like, I have to say that because, like, it is my job to be a pundit. And I know people think it's like, weirdly, people think I'm at my most biased when I'm saying that. Whereas actually, I'm like, no, I don't believe at all that Arsenal could still win the league. But I have to say, like, it's possible. And similarly with Spurs, I'm just like, I don't really believe they're going to go down. But then I look through it and I'm like, okay, their fixtures are Wolves away, Villa away, Leeds home, Chelsea away, Everton home. But I look at those games and I look at West Ham, who have Everton home, Brentford away, Arsenal home, Newcastle away, Leeds home. Horrible fixture list, by the way.
Yeah, well, we knew West Ham's fixtures were harder coming in, even like the last episode.
But because they've got 2 points on Spurs.
Yes.
You're like... If they get 4 points out of those next two games, right? Like Everton at home, Brentford away. If they could draw with Brentford away and beat Everton at home, I kind of think that's it.
Yeah.
Like, because then I look at Spurs and I'm like, if Spurs won both their next couple of games, Spurs would basically need to win the next two games to get to be level then. Like they need to pick up points at an insane rate.
Their next two games are what, Wolves and Villa, both away.
Both away. And this is the thing, like, you often think, oh yeah, well surely they can pick up 7 points, you know? But actually they could go, like, if they go to 1.4 points, like, okay.
Like they're currently under 1 point a game.
Yeah, they're under 1 point a game. If Spurs, so for Spurs to make up, like this, the reason Forest are safe, right, is that Forest are on 36. If Forest get 2 draws from their remaining games, they'll be on 38. Doesn't sound like that much with Spurs on 31. But for Spurs to make up 7 points in 5 games, which again, doesn't sound very much, but it's 1.4 points per game, which is a 53-point pace across a 38-game season.
Yeah.
And Spurs are on something like a 0.93 point pace.
It's like, Everton's season so far is 1.42.
So it's actually a lot. Like, and that would be to catch Forest if Forest get 2 draws from their remaining games. So like that's why Forest are safe. But the simple fact then is that like West Ham get to 37 or something. Like, and it's just so hard for Spurs to claw it back. And I think that they need to, if they're gonna take the points, they have to take them now. Like Everton home, you do not want on the last day to be desperately trying to get 3 points. Chelsea away.
Yeah.
Chelsea away, like, no thank you. So I think they have to go and beat Wolves. I think they basically are like, we have to take at least 4 points from
Wolves and
Wolves and Villa. Ideally, I guess
Wolves Villa need to take 4 points. And, no, actually, we need more than that. This is it.
You need more than that. Because if you take 4 points from those games.
You need three minimum points from your last games.
4 points from those games and West Ham have got like 3 points from those games or 2 points from those games, you're still only level with them. And you're going into the last two games of the season where West Ham have Newcastle away, Leeds home, but you've got Chelsea away, Everton home.
Yeah.
Like, so then you're kind of like, oh, it's really, really scary. And I think from West Ham's point of view, they'll be like, if we get this win this weekend, that honestly might kill Spurs. Like, if we get a win and they don't win this weekend, like, if Spurs, like, draw this weekend and West Ham win, so it's like 36-32.
Yeah, with four games to go. Yeah.
Then they're 2 results away. Like, they've literally got to make up so much ground on you. And I just think, I kind of think that West Ham will get some points in those games. I actually think the Arsenal game suits West Ham as well, because Arsenal will have played a lot of games in 2 weeks. They'll have played 2 tough Champions League semis against Atleti. And Arsenal also will be trying to win. Arsenal will have to win that game. And so as a result, West Ham can basically play the way they want to play. Like, it's not like other games where, like, it's going to be uncomfortable for West Ham to come out against like Everton at home and be like, we've got to fucking put the pressure on these guys.
Yeah.
But they'll have to do it. Against Arsenal, they can be like, we just play this game smart. Like, let them beat themselves. So I just look at this stuff and I think if it's going to happen for Spurs, it needs to happen immediately. Like, if they beat Wolves away and West Ham don't beat Everton, then they'll be dead level again. And then it's like all to play for. If West Ham match or better their result, I think that, like, I honestly am kind of like, it's over.
And I think, like, Spurs are in an absolute nosedive at the minute, whereas West Ham, I feel like the feeling around the club is the complete opposite. Like, they're kind of doing everything that they need to do to stay up, in that they're beating the teams around and below them. And like, they beat Burnley, they beat Spurs, they beat Wolves. I mean, they lost to Forest, sure, but 3 out of 4 isn't bad. They also are picking up points in games where they're not really expected to pick up points. They took points off United and City this half of the season. Like, they've generally done what they need to do to survive. If you want to survive in the Premier League, you beat the teams below you and you see what you can get from the teams above you. Like, generally, beat the teams below you or around you. That generally means that you'll stay up. And when I look through the squads, I'm like, who's going to stand up in the last 4 games and really make their presence known and come up clutch? I look through West Ham and I look at, like, Jared Bowen. 16 goal involvements in a horrid season at West Ham. Only 4 players have more than that in the league, and they're all in the top half. I look at Spurs' squad and I'm like, who here is actually going to stand up and be counted? Like, is Xavi Simons going to be enough to drag Spurs out of this relegation zone and then maintain their Premier League status? I'm not convinced. Chips on the table. West Ham, in their current form with their running, and a player like Bowen, who, like, is literally the one of the like most important members of that club's history. Maybe that's a bit punchy, but he is a huge club legend at this point. You know, they won a European trophy under his captaincy. He scored that goal against Fiorentina. And I look at those squads and I think West Ham in its current form with a player like Bowen feels so much more achievable for them to get, and also they've got the point advantage, feels so much more achievable for them to get to like 38 points than it does for Spurs under De Zerbi with like everything going on at their club to get to 38, 39 points from the last five games. Like I think it is, it's Spurs down.
Man. All right. Okay, right, well, shall we move on to the burn book then? And we'll obviously pick up the Champions League over on the paid side. But the burn book, what do you want to talk about?
Are we going in or are we going out?
Well, okay,
I got one that I want to put in because it's something that's pissed me off recently and I think it's quite funny. But what I want to put in is American kicking or American people kicking things.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Right. There are
when I see an American play football, it is like kind of nice to see, like, you know, like that Ashton Hall guy.
Who's Ashton Hall? Oh, the...
He's that guy who's like dunking his face in like sparkling water.
Yeah, and he wears like nasal strips for bed and he wakes up...
But have you seen him kick a football?
So, no, but this is exactly
and, like,
what I'm talking about.
How are you this unathletic,
this
brother?
Is exactly what I'm talking about. So I've not seen it from Ashton Hall, but I've seen it from a load of like American halftime American football games where they get like just a random fan out. And they have a chance to like kick a field goal for, in occasions, like sometimes legitimate big amounts of money, like $100,000. Or I saw one that was a full 4-year tuition fees for college. Like we're talking big money. And the kicks are like 20, 30 yards out. It's like not a hard kick, right in the center. For reference, that's the 22 meter line in rugby is 25 yards, 24 yards. But these fans that get pulled out in these scenarios, they look like completely normal people. Like, they're not overly athletic, but they're not, like, wildly unathletic. Like, they're just a normal sports fan who you imagine probably played some form of recreational sport as a child or as a teen or as a young adult, whatever. They don't look like, oh my goodness, this person is morbidly obese and can barely move. They just look like a normal person. Mm-hmm. And everything seems normal as they line up the kick or as they talk before it, as they line up the kick, as they get ready to go. Everything seems completely normal. And then in the moments before they start their run-up, they seem to have some sort of like debilitating stroke and lose 90% of their motor skills. Like it reminds me of you know those films where like a dog turns into a human for one day and it has to figure out how to walk on two legs at the start. They, for some reason in their run-up, turn into this type of like Bambi on ice, everything, limbs flailing. They have no control of any of their limbs at all as they like kind of shuffle up to this and then do some weird kind of like awkward toe poke that shanks off to the side, kind of how I would expect my 64-year-old mother to kick, except this is like a 22-year-old guy who's like 5'10" and completely normal. And it seems so strange because for all Europeans there's a base level of kicking coordination that just doesn't seem to exist in America. Like you and I have never played competitive football.
Oh,
right?
Real football. Okay.
Like we've never played like competitive like soccer football, like normal football. We've never played competitive football outside of like childhood, probably.
Yeah.
Like we've played it recreationally. We've done a you know, whatever, five aside, all that stuff.
Played on Monday night, brother. Shit kicked out of us.
But because of that, we just have a base level of just being coordinated enough to kick a ball straight.
To kick a ball, sure.
This is literally walk up to it, kick a ball 25 yards straight through these posts. Like, if you miss, sure, that's fine. Like, I'm not saying everybody has to score every single time, but it's how far away they are from being able to competently kick the ball that I'm just like, I just don't understand how, like, this has been lost in translation so completely. They are so far away from any form of, like, European base level of being able to kick a ball. And I just don't understand why this is such a big thing. Like, everyone I see, I'm just like, I'm watching a video. You know those videos you get served of like somebody who's had like a stroke and they're relearning how to walk? It's literally, as soon as they start their run-up, it just transitions into that. And I see it all the time. I saw one with like one of the Paul brothers, Logan or Jake, whichever one, doesn't matter.
Who cares?
They do the exact same thing. They run up to this toe poke, this American football, goes off to the side. But like it all looks so unnatural. And
yeah,
both of them are technically quote-unquote athletes, right? One of them's a WWE entertainer now. WWF entertainer, one of them's a boxer. Me. Like they are on the higher end of athleticism. and they still just don't have the motor skills to make their swing their leg in a pendulum competently yeah. enough to kick a ball semi-respectably.
But I had a friend like this growing up. My friend Pete, like, he's really, really fit. You know, he was a good runner. He was pretty strong. Like, he could do a bunch of chin-ups and stuff. Mm. Like, you know, he's like, he was all round, like, in good shape. Straight up the least athletic guy I've ever met in my life. Like, there was not a single sport he was good at. And I was just like, but you're so fit. How are you so bad at every sport? I would play tennis with him. And he would be kind of hard to beat because he was like very quick around the court, but like he had zero control and zero like racket game, you know, like he couldn't really do anything with his shots. He could just get it back over the net. But because he would just get it back over the net again and again, like I would literally comfortably beat him playing tennis, even though I was in like horrible shape and I wasn't in horrible shape. I was in okay shape. And he was in like amazing shape just because like I could force him back into the deep court and then play a drop shot or something. Mm. Like it was so funny. And it's just a very funny genre of person who exists where they're like, I'm so like sporty, but they're not. They're like good at literally like fitness stuff.
Yeah.
But they are not sporty at all. That's very, very funny to me that you're like Matt Letizia. I mean, funny day to talk about him, but you know, someone like Matt the fact that like Matt, how do you explain that like Matt Letizia was a higher level athlete than Ashton Hall or, you know, the Paul brothers? It's like very funny to try and do that, or to look at Ryan Sherkey. Yeah, like, let's get Ryan Sherkey's shirt off and make him stand next to the Paul brothers and say to everybody, who do you think is the world-class athlete?
Yeah. It's like Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, but I don't know. I do think Wayne Rooney at his peak, like, okay, he looked like his body wanted to be fat, but yeah. he was like broad. He was very strong. He was fast. Like, I don't know. I always thought that was a bit overplayed. Like he was just a little barrel.
Yeah, I know. But if you compare him to like Ashton Hall.
If you look at some like guys who run the 100 meters, like they're all like ripped, but they are kind of like little barrels. And that's basically like kind of where Rooney was. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Sure. Like I do agree that this is very funny. Watching Americans kick a football is extremely amusing. Yeah, this is why Harry Kane's thing where he's like, I'm going to be a kicker in the NFL when I retire. You're like, yeah, probably. Go and do it. Like, you honestly, do you think they'd be like, what? I can't believe it. Be like when he went to Bayern Munich and all these Bayern Munich fans were like, actually, our league is very hard. And, you know,
33-year-old Harry Kane is destroyed.
Everybody acts like the Bundesliga is actually a really easy league. And in fact, it is a very hard league and you can't just beat all these teams. And Robert Lewandowski is the best player that anyone has ever seen here, really. And Harry Kane turned up and they were like, oh, this guy is actually much better. yeah. You know, like Harry Kane was like, guys, playing in the Bundesliga is like playing against my kids in the back garden. Like, this is a piece of piss.
There's a load of Irish guys going over to America now to play collegiate level football, and some are in the NFL, who were good Gaelic football players.
Yeah, sure.
And people are losing their shit over their ability to like punt the ball. They're like, oh my god, they just kick it so far. Some of them can kick with both feet. Like, they're honestly
and obviously like the pressure as well, where they're just like, oh my god, like people are running at you from 40 yards away. How do you stand up under the pressure of doing it? It's like, because like in Gaelic football, those guys are gonna knock your teeth out.
And they all start from like right beside me, and I need to find space to then kick the ball.
But it's kind of amazing that you know, 100 years later, like Irish people are still going to America to seek their fortune among the fucking rubes. They're like, you guys are idiots. Like, yeah. we should start doing with Australians as well. They should just import some Australians. Anyway, like, yeah, I think this is a good one. I mean, do you want to do your other one? Because I don't really have an in and out this week. Like, what I actually did was I listed some things that I think are ins and outs ahead of the summer. These are mostly clothes things.
Okay.
So I do have a bunch of those. But I don't have like a what's in the burn but what's out of the burn but per se.
How about you rattle off yours and we see where we're going?
I'll list my ins, then you do your out, and then I'll do my outs. Okay, so ins. Oh no, so ins, those are things that are in. So it should be my outs, right? Yeah. As in like my stuff that's shit now. these are things that are shit. Maybe they were okay before, now they're shit, or they've always been shit, or they're embarrassing now. Enormous jeans. I mean the really enormous ones. Like, you know, you see these Instagram videos where people stand in front of the camera and they pull them out to the side and it makes them look like they've got fucking rickets. Like
they're always balloon shaped because
it's so funny. Yeah. And also, you know, Emma and I were talking about this today, that we were like, man, we had a good run there for 20 years where it was considered bad form to use like homophobic slurs. It was considered bad form to use ableist slurs.
Yeah.
And also teenagers were not walking around with their jeans dragging on the floor, like fraying the hems. And now all that shit is back. It's like everybody's using slurs all the time.
It's real like 90s core.
And I see these people on Instagram where they're like, yeah, look at my outfit. And they pull their jeans out to the side to show how fucking wide they are. And I think, I don't think that looks good. But even if you think that looks good, that will look good once. And then those jeans will have dragged on the floor or it's wet or something and they're fucked. And you'll never want to wear them again. And so that sucks. Louis Vuitton.
You done with?
I've never really liked it. Mm. I've always thought it was tacky shit. But there was a woman, a mum from Coco's school. There are a couple of mums.
Is this paddle mum?
Who have like the... No. God, fuck her. Like they have like... They have LV bags.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I was like, this is just sad now.
The classic ones. The classic brand ones with the detail all over it. Yeah.
And I was like, this is just sad now. Yeah. Like this just feels really try hard. I always thought it was a bit, always felt like that. I always thought it was try hard. Yeah, I know. But I think before, if somebody said that's kind of try hard, you could be like, well, you're just jealous. You know, like everybody wants an LV bag. And I do think that you saw more taste-making celebrities. You know, like okay, fucking like, I remember like Kanye and Kim were like big into LV shit. Now, do I want to dress like Kanye and Kim? No. But at the time, they were very popular and seen as like taste-makers. But now I'm like, this is a very expensive thing you have that feels like a relic of 15 years ago as well.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought it was tacky. Now I think it's tacky and outdated.
My issue with LV bags was always that if you bought a real one, everyone's going to think, oh, is that fake? And you spent loads of money for people being like, oh, actually, you're just one, trying hard, and two, it's probably fake anyway. If you bought a fake one, then you're definitely trying too hard to kind of show people how much money you don't have. And then I think it fully tipped when people started buying the wash bags because they were the cheapest item that Louis Vuitton sold. And then they started carrying them around as purses. It was mostly men carrying them around as like male purses. But it was literally just a wash bag because it was the cheapest thing that Louis Vuitton sold in that pattern, the famous Louis Vuitton pattern. And I was like, at this stage, like we're just trying way, way, way too hard to show people you have something from this aspirational brand. And it's just like, it's just way too much, guys. Like,
agreed.
It's not giving off, at least from my perspective, it's not giving off the image that you think it's giving off.
Yeah. Okay, some more outs. Seeing as you mentioned her, Twee Sports.
Okay.
Like paddle and pickleball. Get the fuck out of here with that.
What's the difference?
I don't know. But okay, sure. Fuck both of them. There's a bunch of brands that a bunch of like kind of vibey guys are into. You know, like About Blank and Running. Like these brands that guys are really into. I look at that when I see them wearing this stuff that just says like Running on it or About Blank. And I'm like, this is like a Stanley Cup for men. Like, that's what it is. Like, it's embarrassing.
I initially went to ice hockey there, but I brought it back, yeah.
Having your mouth open in photos. You know, you remember there's that certain kind of person who, when a photo is being taken, they go...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, they're too awkward to just stand there and smile, and so they just open their mouth. Like, it's not even like a big smile. It's just like, oh, I'm being a bit silly, and no, out. That's always been out, though. Sydney Sweeney, out. Matching gym sets. And by the way, oh my God, and FD was a real big fucking offender for this. People who say, oh, you can't mix Adidas and Nike. Like, you know, when people say that, they're like, you can't wear like an Adidas top and like Nike shorts. Like,
I used to actively try and do that because I didn't want to look too matching.
Yeah, you're like, it's not the Bloods and the Crips. Like, of course you can. Like, I don't know.
Cross community projects.
I never understood why people said that then. I was like, you do realize that Adidas and Nike are not real clothes. They're athleisure, you know, like they're not real clothes. And actually, you can also mix real clothes, like, but especially athleisure.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to wearing like athletic gear, you just take the athletic gear from the top of the pile.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, right, I'm going to the gym. How hot a day is it? Am I going to wear a long sleeve? Okay, what's the first long sleeve? Oh, it's this one. What are the first pair of shorts? Oh, it's these. And so I'm like, oh no, I mixed like Lululemon and New Balance. Oh,
that's on the assumption, though, that the athleisure is being used appropriately and not as fashion. Like, this is my outfit for the day.
Even if it's used as fashion, like,
I think we never really wore those type of clothes fashionably. Like, like as an actual outfit choice, it would be, oh, I'm going to the shops, let me throw this on, or I'm going to the gym or for a run, so I'm going to put on something athletic. At which point we cared so much less about it.
I'm going to FT and, like, you know.
I'm going to work.
Who cares about being presentable? So tanning. If you still tan in the sun, I'm sorry, but you're a fucking idiot.
As in just, like, lying out in the sun?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but, like, I have this conversation, I think, a lot, because I know a lot of sort of elder millennials, you know, they're like 40 to 45, and they're like, and especially people who are 50, like, that's actually the range. So they're not even elder millennials, they're that bit older. They will still talk to you about getting a tan. And I had a conversation with somebody the other day where they were talking about getting a tan, and I was just, like, looking at them like they were saying, you know, well, obviously I inject heroin between my toes. Because I was just like, I said, I would simply never lie out in the sun trying to get a tan. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, it's fucking crazy. Like, the benefit of it is nothing. The cost of it is legitimately, like, very well established at this point. And this idea, like, well, you have to get a tan. Doesn't everyone look good with a tan? I just thought, honey, like, this is 80s shit. This is, like, 80s and 90s stuff when having a tan was a status symbol. Because it showed that you could it showed that you could afford to go on holiday. Now, I'm just like, having a tan is a sign that you're a fucking idiot. And especially, and if you go and get a fake tan, I think a fake tan is preferable to a sun tan. But I also think going and getting a fake tan is pathetic. Smash burgers, get out of here with that shit.
I don't mind smash burgers.
I know, but, I don't mind. It is a bit, I don't mind eating one, but the idea of just, like, I need a smash burger, you know, smash burger is better than better than a regular burger. No, it isn't. No one cares. That'll probably do. That's quite a lot of outs. What are you putting in the? What are you taking out of the burn book? And then I'll give you my ins.
This is the most confusing burn book ever. But what I'm taking out of the burn book is Bonnie walking.
Oh, baby Bonnie.
We had a milestone yesterday, taking her first proper, like, calculated steps at 14 months. For the record, I was 9 months when I walked, so fucking about time.
Yeah, but often boys who are backwards in their language walk sooner.
it's nice that it's worked out that way. We're staying true to the stereotypes. But she took her first steps about 6 weeks ago and then just did nothing since. She just refused to. She took like four steps about 6 weeks ago and then just did nothing for the next 6 weeks. And basically refused to try it again until yesterday, when she kind of started toddling about the living room. And I actually almost put this in the burn book, because when she started walking for what we thought at that stage for the first time was, I was on my way home from work. So I watched it through my phone from the video that Jess sent. So I was just like, that's a bit disappointing, isn't it? And then, even though Jess saw it in the living room when it happened last night or yesterday afternoon, nursery then today told us that she started walking around their playroom yesterday, and that the staff got so excited that they actually scared Bonnie by accident and she started to cry because they were like, oh my God, you're walking. So in a way, it ended up being that, like, both Jess and I missed her, like, first, I guess, legitimate calculated steps. And I guess people put it maybe perhaps too much weight on firsts, but one, it would have been nice to be there, but also it kind of just really hit home that it was like, you know, we're just going to miss so much of this stuff because we're working, like, collectively, I don't know, 80 plus hours a week. So there are going to be load more firsts that just kind of happen at nursery, or one of us is going to be there and the other one's not, just down to circumstance. So it was a real kind of, like, double-edged sword in that I love that she's walking around and I love seeing her grow and develop each day. But, you know, you hate that kind of a lot of it or some of it is going to happen when you're not there, just because you're, like, in the office and she's with somebody else for, like, 6 hours of the day, either nursery or with grandparents or whatever. So, yeah, it was a real kind of, like, double-edged sword moment. But I'm very happy that she's now a walker.
Oh, Bonnie. Good for her. Yeah. I mean, it is a really fun phase, I think, to enter into. It makes life so much easier. You know, you're not walking around, like, holding them up. If it's, like, wet outside, like, because sometimes it's wet outside and they don't want to be in the pram, but you're like, I can't just put you down because you'll sit on the floor and get a wet ass. And so when they can walk, suddenly they and it becomes an activity, right, where they want to do, like, Goldie still just wants to walk everywhere. She's just like, walking is fun, even though it objectively is boring.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to take her to get her first shoes this weekend.
Oh my God.
But we're actually a bit concerned that her feet are too small for the smallest size that they'll be able to offer. But we'll see what happens. We're going to go to Clark's this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think, you know, it's kind of hard to top that. That's quite strong. Okay, so what are my ins for the summer? What's the stuff that I think is good? Band tees. I think they're back.
Mm.
Band tees are back. You know, I feel like they've been coming back for a while. Huh?
You're still looking for that capish one?
It will simply never happen. It will never happen. It's just not possible. Yeah, I don't think it's gonna happen unless she like releases some good new merch or something. But you know, you want it to benefit the artist. But anyway, yeah, I think band tees. Maybe it's as well because sorry, this is only half related. But there's a bunch of the menswear guys I follow on Instagram. They're so fucking stupid, Pete. Like a load of them, I think, are kind of losing their minds. Partially because some of them are middle-aged and all they do is like wear silly outfits, post them online, and then comment on their friends saying, oh wow, that's a great outfit, whatever they're wearing. Like that's basically what they do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so sometimes somebody
that's basically
just be
the equivalent
wearing
of like teenage Bebo usage
or like or drunk girls in like a nightclub loop.
Yeah,
where they're
queen.
Just like, but you're so pretty.
Yeah,
like he fuck him. Like it's like that's literally what these guys like talk like, where they're just like, oh my god bro, like this is so clean. And you'll be like, it's a t-shirt.
Those are like fire emojis. Yeah,
and it's a t-shirt and jeans and loafers. And you're like, oh fuck me, like oh my god, like Coco Chanel red for filth, shut the fuck up. Like it's just like that kind of shit. And so now I see these like middle-aged kind of doughy men who are buying flares and they're like, yeah, I love flares. And people are like, wow, this is such a sick look bro. And I'm like, you look fucking stupid. And I really hope there's someone in your life who is like not into menswear who can say to you,
what the fuck are you wearing?
You're wearing fucking flares. Yeah. Like my brother in Christ. Like if your look is like disco stew, then you can wear flares. If you're a normal man wearing like a denim jacket, or look, I hate to be reductive about this and be like certain body types can't wear certain things. I don't think that's necessarily true, but I do think that if you're really tall and slim, you are likely to get away with a flare more than someone who looks like me. Like it just doesn't fucking work. And so there's that stuff as well. So a bunch of these guys like are just absolutely losing their minds. But it's funny seeing how stupid some of them are. Like when they wade into territory that's not to do with clothes. Because there was one guy the other day where he was like, I've had a really sad one because I've been listening to this artist all day on Spotify and really vibing with the music. And when I finally looked him up, he's fucking AI. And I was like, sorry, dummy, but like the I wish there was a way for this to stop you passing on your genetic material to children. You know, like in the past, it feels like being this dumb would have got you killed by a saber-toothed tiger and you would have been selected out of the gene pool. But now you just post about it on Instagram and people are like, yeah, I think it's really unethical that Spotify don't tell you their AI. It's just like, no, shut up. Like, and he posted a clip of the music as well. And he was like, doesn't this sound good though? And I thought, again, there's this genre of music that Americans are into. It's not country, but it does kind of feel like country.
Oh,
you know, where
it's
just
like,
where it's just like a kind of throaty man's voice just being like, you know, I got emotions, but I'm still tough. Like this kind of stuff. And the lyrics are just about nothing.
Well,
and honestly, I listen to
like 30
seconds.
Music, but if it was for a commercial, like an internal commercial video.
Sure.
Corporate video.
Urban country music. Yeah. It's like corporate country. But yeah, it's just this weird kind of, and I was just like, this is exactly the kind of music that I'd be like, is this AI? Even if it isn't, it's so boring and shit. And I was like, I don't think that I'm being like, oh, I have much better taste than this. I was just like, there's nothing to this music. It has no properties. It made me laugh that he was such a dummy. And then I thought, well, you know what? Band tees are even more in, because with a band tee, you can at least signal that you fucking know something about something. I know that people get very annoyed about it when people are wearing a band tee and they're like, name five songs by that person.
Yeah.
But I don't know, having real preferences and real tastes and real things that you like, I do think it's actually quite an important part of being a normal human, and band tee's in. Two kinds of glasses, pervert murderer glasses and steampunk villain glasses.
Okay, pervert murderer. Yeah,
oversized wire frames.
The Jeffrey Dahmer.
Sure.
Yeah.
And steampunk villain, you know, just like slightly over-designed. You know, like the ones that are just like half moon glasses or something.
Yeah.
Or really tiny round glasses. Like those are kind of
the ones you'd expect to see kind of in The Matrix.
Yeah, those are kind of in at the moment. Brimmed hats. Not fedoras, but I kind of feel like...
Like pork pie hat?
Not really. More like cowboy hats.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there is a bit country hype at the minute.
But it doesn't even have to be a cowboy hat. There are ones that kind of look like cowboy hats, but you know they're more like a sort of Amish hat. You know what I mean? It's like a pilgrim's hat.
It's like a flat top, and
like a wide brim, and like, yeah, I don't know. I think people are getting more adventurous with hats, and while I think a lot of the time they look stupid, sometimes they don't, and I do think it is good for us to have a wider range of hats available to us than like beanies and baseball caps. Like, it's boring. On women, like 70s style, like blue or green eyeshadow, that's really back in a big way. So is goth makeup, which is great. Double-breasted suits for men, back in a big way. Pinstripes. Women's bags for men. Like, I see a lot of men who are basically carrying clutches or like kind of handbags. You know, you'll see like Wisdom K on Instagram. He'll like have like a Birkin bag or something.
Mm.
And I'm like, that is quite cool. Curly hair. Last one. Curly hair.
That's been in for a while.
Yeah, I know. But like it now feels like it's really everywhere.
Yeah,
like
people get perms.
It's fully, I mean, that's a bit much. But yeah, I think it's a... That's my little list. There's probably a load of other stuff that I would have put in there if I'd thought about it for more than 5 minutes. But that's my list. So anyway, we've overrun this part of the podcast, shock horror. We will catch a bunch of you over on the paid side. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sending questions. We will get some of them in the coming weeks. And yeah, see you later. Bye.